Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. Good morning. Our first case is 10-1196, Richard Clifton versus the Village of Blanchester. We have for the appellant, Mr. Demas.
Yes, ma'am.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honors, this case presents some unique factual and legal issues which we are asking this court to decide. Very briefly on the factual background, I represent Mr. Clifton, owns property which is adjacent to the Village of Blanchester. The Village of Blanchester, through a zoning ordinance, had rezoned the property abutting Mr. Clifton's from, I believe, agricultural light industry to heavy industry. Mr. Clifton, not living in the Village of Blanchester, has claimed that the action of the Village of Blanchester has constituted a taking.
Counsel, as you begin, so I'm clear about it. Is there any allegation that Blanchester didn't follow the right procedure or hearing or notice or any other defect in the rezoning itself?
Your Honor, that was dealt with in an earlier litigation, and it was concluded that the zoning ordinance was constitutional.
All right, so your clients participated in that earlier proceeding to
yes,
challenge the zoning ordinance?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and so this is now the next step?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
And the first issue is the issue of standing. And this case has gone back and forth from the trial court to the 12th District a couple of times. And in the most recent 12th District decision, the court went at great length citing cases from other jurisdictions that were not exactly on point, but I believe certainly analogous and would have the same application, indicating that Mr. Clifton should have standing in this matter. However, the 12th District, really without any reasoning or explanation, in essence stated, we're not bound by those decisions and we are going to deny standing. I would submit to this court that review of the cases that were cited by the 12th District would suggest that Mr. Clifton does have standing to pursue his partial regulatory taking claim against the village pursuant to Penn Central. Those cases really couched, I believe, by granting standing, couching the issue in due process, saying even though you're an adjoining landowner, you don't live in the municipality that has done the zoning, but it affects your property. And if you have property interests that are affected, that you need to have some recourse and having that opportunity to be heard and to have your day in court. And in those cases, it was the zoning that affected the other landowners. The same in this case. The zoning has affected Mr. Clifton's property, and therefore, it would seem that he should at least be able to have his day in court to determine whether or not he can prevail under Penn Central.
And counsel, that's basically all we're here to determine today, is whether or not is the proper plaintiff in an action in a lower court, correct?
Actually, when I would agree with that. I'm a little confused though from the 12th District's decision. I mean, they ruled against us on standing, and then I don't know if I'm interpreting the rest of the opinion as an advisory opinion, or so I'm a little confused as to if their ruling on on the Penn Central issue, on the merits
there's
of the
case. There's a diminution of value of the property is something they opined on.
Yes, they did. They did deal with our Penn Central issue. They did not employ a Penn Central analysis, and so I'm not sure whether that is binding since they had disposed of the case on standing.
Counsel, if we agree with you with respect to the standing issue, is there any limitation that should be placed on courts that determine whether an individual has standing? Because we're talking about a non-resident. We're talking about a governmental entity that has enacted regulation pursuant to its own local police power.
Correct.
So what, in your view, should be the limitations on allowing any other resident of any other township to bring an action such as this?
Well, it would seem that if you are adjoining property, as in this case, when you're right on the border, that standing should be conferred to those parties, and that is what the bulk of authority would seem. But are you asking, would you give standing to people who live 5 miles away?
That's my question. You're saying that every adjoining property that rings the township is
no, no, ma'am. I'm sorry. I'm saying if as here the zoning that granted the heavy industry is right next to Mr. Clifton's property. So I don't think that someone on the other side of town necessarily would have standing, but then again, I don't know if you could carve out a bright line rule, but it certainly would seem that if the factory is here and your property is here, that clearly it's affecting you, that this person would have standing.
So potentially any property that was contiguous to the zoned area, you would say?
I would think it would have to be clearly immediately affected by it. That. And whether that could be in a bright line rule or if it would have to be determined case by case, but I would think that you'd have to have a showing that the new action is immediate, it's right there, and it's affecting you.
Isn't your client claiming expectations have been affected, the expectations and property? I mean, when you talk about the standing here, couldn't any other resident also claim, if they're close to the zoned area, that their expectations and their property have also been affected?
Well, whether they could make that claim, whether I guess anyone could make a claim, is it valid? I mean, here we have evidence in the record through affidavit that the purpose of when Mr. Clifton purchased this property, the purpose was to develop it into residential units. And so we have evidence before the court saying what our specific expectation, investment-backed expectation was, and that has not been contested factually at all. But I think that you would have to be able to, as we believe we're demonstrating here, to show a real harm from the regulation. So it's not just for anyone that may live 5 or 10 miles away from where it is.
Counsel, I want to back you up to where Justice Kupp started you off. Your client actually was able to participate in, just as any citizen of Blanchester participated in, the initial debate over the zoning change.
Yes, he went.
And there's no complaint about that. So they allowed him, whether or not he had a legal right, was that established or uncontested?
He was excuse me, he was able to participate in those, but
right.
I think
so the 12th district essentially said no standing, but if you had standing, it's not a meritorious claim.
Correct.
Right. And so we have a choice. It's your principal argument is the standing question should be resolved here and nothing more at this point?
Well, I mean, we believe that the standing issue, that we have standing in this case, and that under the facts of the case, that we have.
It has to go back because nothing was developed.
Yes, I mean, we believe that we have sufficient evidence put forth in the record in the context of summary judgment that if we are granted standing, this matter should go back for trial.
Well, would that be the disposition? If we agreed with you on standing, we would send it back and say there's enough for trial? Doesn't that get us into the merits? Because to me, you're real shaky on the merits of your claim. Starting with the fact that Mr. Clifton did it to himself. He sold off a piece of ground for an industrial user.
Well, Your Honor, I'm not sure I know that that was referenced in the dissent from
That didn't happen?
Well, he did sell the property, and I don't believe this is in the record anywhere in the depositions, but the property was sold for the purpose of having certain drainage issues taken care of. And that place was a in light industry. So I don't think
and,
that
and
it's
the same user is there now.
I'm sorry?
Is the same user there now that he sold to?
No, sir. Not at this point.
Okay. And again, I'm moving to the merits of this because you say we send it back and tell the judge he's got to try the case. If his entire property, the piece he sold, was that in Blanchester when he sold it, or did he annex it before he sold it, or how did that get into Blanchester? Part of the farm was in and part wasn't, or was it?
Your Honor, I believe that, I'm not certain, I believe that part was in Blanchester, but I'm not certain of that.
All right. Let's assume his whole farm's in Blanchester. The same zoning takes place. Does every neighbor have a takings case when a potential takings case anytime there's a change in the zoning of the property next door?
I think if you can demonstrate through the three prongs of Penn Central and satisfy those, then yes, you would. But I don't...
We don't have any case in Ohio like that at this point. Is there any case around the country where a neighbor brings a takings case successfully when their property wasn't changed in his zoning, but the adjoining property was changed, and I grant you, some zoning can be pretty detrimental to the neighbors.
Your Honor, I have not found a takings case, but the case is cited.
So this would be, if we agreed with you, and you were able to go to trial and put on evidence, and a jury said, yeah, you've been damaged, that would be the first of its kind in the country.
I believe so, Your Honor.
Would that not open every zoning decision that any zoning board makes, subject to a great deal of trepidation about this kind of litigation?
I don't necessarily think it's going to open floodgates, but on the reverse side, what can be worse is if the remedy or relief is not there, then at every jurisdictional border, they can do whatever they want. And in our briefs, we reference which, you know.
Well, I'm saying forget the border. Say I agree with you on the standings question. Seems to me it's still a pretty big leap to turn this into
it is,
a takings case. Assuming you were in Blanchester to begin with. So you had standing.
It's the effect on the property. I mean, that is the uniqueness of this case.
Well,
the regulation is not the property is not the subject of the regulation.
But doesn't every zoning decision have an effect on neighbors?
It could, yes. But it doesn't necessarily mean that that is it's a negative effect, or that automatically is going to say 1,000 lawsuits will be filed. And again, I come back to
let's take a simple one: a residential neighborhood. It's zoned for single family, and somebody has a piece of open property, and they want to go multifamily, high density. Neighbors aren't going to like that. The guy in the single-family house with the nice lawn and all of that doesn't want an apartment building next to him. Taking, potentially?
I guess there could be a potential, yes. But you would still, though, have to be able to prove factually that you've met the Penn Central elements. But those, I believe, are questions of fact.
Yeah.
When you get to the partial takings question, the Court of Appeals referenced the Constitution of our state as to preclude one municipality from appropriating property outside its territorial boundary. What is your reaction to that position?
Your Honor, I would submit again to the uniqueness of this case that is dealing with what I would call an affirmative taking. Meaning,
I'm sorry.
I would refer to that as limiting what I would call an affirmative taking. Meaning that the village of Blanchester, if they wanted to expand a road and needed to go into someone's front yard, they can only do that within their boundary. They couldn't go outside of their jurisdictional border and physically invade and physically take. That is limited to within side its boundaries. I mean, what we're suggesting, though, is are they going to be is the jurisdictional border, is that going to make them immune from doing whatever they want, regardless of the effect of the adjoining landowner?
Are you saying that a municipality cannot take property outside the territorial boundary, but if it takes an action in connection with zoning, it is subject to an inverse condemnation, and it therefore is subject to a taking? Your argument?
I think what we're saying is that we are arguing this is a takings case, but it is not the traditional.
The city can't take property outside its boundary, but this is still a takings case by virtue of the zoning that it affected.
Because of the effect of the zoning is what we are submitting constitutes the taking.
And so if we put wind farms in Williams County, we've affected any adjoining county perhaps, and they could be subject, or whatever action we would take in any zoning regulation, adjoining property owners would have, in your view, if we agree with you, a cause for an inverse taking. I'm trying to understand your argument. I'm not trying to.
No, I understand, Your Honor. I mean, yes, but if we're talking about the county, if the windmill is the wind turbine line is right on the border,
yes.
It's in my backyard,
yes.
And here's the county or the township line, and you've got 50 of them going through my backyard. That I would say that person should be able to bring a claim. Whether they can prove it or not, I don't know. But I don't think that means the person living 10 miles away would have that same interest.
And the statute 163.63, how does that interplay with your argument?
Well, Your Honor, I think that is what is saying that, and I understand those provisions say that eminent domain condemnation proceedings are pursuant to this chapter. It's got to be done within can only be done within the territorial limit.
Yes.
And I guess what we're asking this court on this novel issue is that if that is simply limited to that, then any property owner on the other side of the boundary line has no recourse. That seems inequitable under certain circumstances. And I understand that it is not consistent with the general understanding of they're going to take a front yard for a road, they have to do that in that within their jurisdictional bounds. But what about the person right on the other side?
I think I understand it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Demas. You're concluded.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Barbary, air?
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. My name's Larry Barbier. I represent the Village of Blanchester, and I want to disagree with what the appellant's attorney said about what we're here to talk about today, because this case has been to the 12th District Court of Appeals twice. The first time it went to the Court of Appeals, the Court of Appeals sent it back, and the Court of Appeals sent it back to the Common Pleas Court with a mandate to decide two issues. One, to decide the standing issue. Two, to decide whether or not there was a regulatory taking under the Penn Central case. The trial court did that. The trial court ruled in favor of the appellee on both, said there was no standing, there was no taking. Case went up to the 12th District again. The 12th District, in the first part of its decision, said, we agree there is no standing, but since we gave a mandate to the trial court to deal with the regulatory taking issue also, we are going to also decide that issue. So it was not just an advisory opinion. They decided both issues, and it went back to, because they had mandated it go back to the court on both issues.
Counsel, did
yes,
they
sir.
Not decide the standing issue based upon the merits of the substantive law?
I don't.
It seemed to me in reading the materials that, or I may have it confused with the next case dealing with the same subject, that there was no standing because there was no right to substantive relief under these circumstances. So it seems that the two were entirely entwined, and I just wondered what your thoughts were, if that's the way it was decided, and if so, whether that was the proper way of doing it.
Well, I think there's an interplay, but I don't think they were inextricably intertwined, because I think part of the standing argument is whether there was an injury in fact. And I think the way the court analyzed the injury in fact issue is that the only way a plaintiff can make a takings claim against a municipality or a village, any political subdivision, is through a mandamus action in order to force the village or the township or the political subdivision to do an appropriation or an inverse condemnation. And that's the Shimo versus City of Mayfield Heights case. The site on that case is 95 Ohio State 3rd, 59.
Counsel, dealing first with the standing
okay.
issue, Judge Hendrickson wrote extensively in both this case and the Middletown case, and I assume you've studied the Middletown case as well, since we're hearing them both today together for a reason. On the standing issue, if I recall his analysis, he went through not only his personal analysis, but he cited to a number of states who have considered this question and argues that the prevailing outcome is that there is standing on this kind of a question. Do you disagree with his analysis in that regard?
Well, I disagree with his analysis for two reasons. One, that's not the law of Ohio, but two, those were not takings cases. And those were cases where people just stood up, as plaintiff did in this case. People stood up at the hearing and were able to participate. The plaintiff said he deserves due process. He got due process. He went to the hearing. He participated in the hearing. He made his thoughts known at the hearing. Then he filed an administrative appeal. The administrative appeal was dismissed. The judge also found at the same time that the zone change was constitutional. Plaintiff initially filed a notice of appeal to the appeals court from that decision, but then dismissed that appeal and filed a takings case. None of the cases that are cited in either dissent talk about a takings case. A takings case is different because in a takings case, the only way you can make a takings case is through an inverse condemnation and through a mandamus action. This is not a mandamus action. Plaintiff did not file a mandamus. It's not an inverse condemnation case because his property is outside the Village of Blanchester. So that's a key distinction in this case. It's different from all the cases that are cited.
Well, let's say at the end of the deliberations on these two cases, we disagree with the communities who say no standing, and we say there should be standing. Now I want to move you to if you're doing a Penn Central analysis or any analysis that we determine is the appropriate way to evaluate this kind of question.
The Penn Central analysis.
Let me ask you if we move beyond the standing question. And I personally find Hendrickson's analysis pretty good, but if we move beyond that, I want to take you through the same question I had with counsel for the landowner. Let's assume this property was in Blanchester to begin with.
Okay. Penn Central's
What's the claim here?
Penn Central's right on point. And it says there is no taking, period. The law of Ohio and the law of the United States Supreme Court is absolutely clear. Plaintiff said in his affidavit it was his intention to divide this property and to sell it off and develop. He bought it. It was farmland. It's farmland. He's still farming it. And according to plaintiff's affidavit and the other expert's affidavit, he could still use it as sell it for residential property. He just can't get as much money. And he says there's a substantial diminution in the value. Now, Penn Central speaks to that case directly on page 131. And what Penn Central says, secondly, appellants focusing on the character and impact of the New York City law argue that it affects a taking because its operation has significantly diminished the value of the terminal site. Appellants concede that the decisions sustaining other land use regulations, which like the New York City law, are reasonably related to the promotion of the general welfare, uniformly reject the proposition that diminution in property value standing alone can establish a taking. That's all we have in this case, and we already have a ruling in this case that this is constitutional.
Well, the ruling seemed to me to be sort of simplistic. They're saying, well, he can still farm it, and doesn't really do an analysis of the extent of the economic loss. And I want to probe that for just a minute. Was that piece that he sold to an industrial user in Blanchester when he sold it, or did he have to annex that?
No, he sold it to a user. He owned property that was in both Blanchester and outside Blanchester.
So when he bought it originally, it was mixed.
Right, and so the 2.87 acres he sold were in the village of Blanchester.
Is there a sewer system in the township or?
Yes.
So there's a countywide sewer system and water system. So that's not an issue for him. So his intended use is realistic at this point.
Well, his intended use of perhaps using it for residential, the only evidence is he testified that, yes, he still could use it for residential.
Sure.
He just doesn't think he'll get as much money. The affidavit of the expert says if he sells it, he won't get as much money. The affidavit of the other expert says if he sells it, he can sell it as residential, he just won't get as much money for it. Under Penn Central, that's not a taking, period. That's the law of the United States. Now, Judge Ringland, in his dissent, in the Middletown Moore case, and he talks about this at some length, and he says, clearly the economic impact of zoning regulation results in diminution in value. However, the United States Supreme Court has found that diminution of property value alone is insufficient to support a taking, and then cites numerous cases. Then he says, similarly, the Ohio Supreme Court has also noted diminution in value does not constitute a taking. That's all we have here. He bought the property in 1993. He's farmed it for 14 years as of the date of his deposition, sold it to this other, sold 2.87 acres, and he's still farming his property, and he's still able to sell it as residential. The only thing we have is a diminution in value, And the Ohio Supreme Court and the United States Supreme Court have said that is not a taking under any circumstances.
Mr. Arbier, go ahead.
Jill. What about the recognition in Shelley Materials where we do recognize the partial regulatory taking, and diminution in value is one element, but also the character or the impact of the regulation on investment-backed expectations and the character of the governmental action. So we did distinguish. I know you're talking about takings when you talk about Penn Central, but there was the recognition of partial regulatory taking, which I think is what we're talking about here.
But the law, what we're talking about here, Your Honor, is a partial taking is what they're claiming. Now, I'm not sure, frankly, that the law supports a finding that a partial taking can exist in a case where the zoning has been already ruled to be constitutional. My understanding of what Chimo said, now that's not really something that was addressed in the lower court when they asked about the partial taking, but my understanding of what Chimo said is it's a disjunctive test. It either has to be unconstitutional and not serve a legitimate governmental interest, or there has to be no economic viable use left. And if it's not constitutional, then it doesn't have to be a complete taking in order for there to be a recovery. But in this case, the zoning has already been ruled by the court to be constitutional. So in my view, that means that in this case, we use the Penn Central analysis and we use the other Ohio Supreme Court analysis that say diminution in value by itself is not enough to constitute a taking. And the kinds of cases where they say diminution in value in addition to other things can be a taking are ones where you have planes flying overhead, so the enjoyment of the property is diminished in some way. Something more than just the inability to sell the property for as much as they thought they were going to get, but he's still able to use it for exactly what he was using it before. He can use it for residential, he can use it for farmland. So he's able to use it exactly the same as he was before.
Isn't your strongest argument, though, that the Blanchester could not give the remedy that's being asked because the mandamus could not occur for property outside its jurisdiction?
That's a very strong argument, Your Honor, and I would submit as well, if you take plaintiff's argument to the logical extreme, what plaintiff is saying, we deregulated this property in Blanchester. We didn't create a higher regulation. We actually deregulated it. Plaintiff is saying that if the village of Blanchester did away with its zoning code, said, look, we're tired of getting sued by all these people who want to change their zoning, because of course they would have gotten sued if they'd said no to this zone change. We're tired of getting sued. We're going to just do away with our Blanchester zoning code. Well, then they build a factory next to the plaintiff, and he's going to say he can sue now because they did away with their zoning code, and now they're able to build this plant, because that's essentially what he's saying here. They deregulated it. They eased the regulation on this property. So how can it be a regulatory taking when they deregulated? That just, there's no logic to that.
Counsel, I don't understand the term deregulation. Put this in what would generally be regarded as the highest use category there is. That was the change.
Right. Well, it's a Blanchester citizen came to the village of Blanchester and said, look, there's a zoning in place on my property that restricts my use.
Yeah.
I want to be able to use it in a more wider form, okay?
Yeah.
So I want you to ease the regulation from a I-1 to an I-2. So they do that. They agree. And if they had not agreed, they could.
That makes his property more valuable. I mean, that's what this guy's complaining about. Blanchester helped one guy make his property more valuable and diminish the value of the other. I want to ask an overarching question of you, though. You cite Penn Central and you talk about one of our cases that you think is good for you on the takings. We have found that from time to time the Ohio Constitution provides greater protection to our citizens than the United States Constitution. Is there anything that prohibits us in the jurisprudence from saying we think these property owners should have a greater protection than the U.S. Supreme Court decisions, and we think that case of ours that you rely on should be modified, and we think that this landowner should be able to make a presentation as to whether or not there's been a reverse taking.
I think.
Are we constitutionally limited from doing that?
I don't think the Constitution says you can't. I don't think any court has done that. I mean,
I think
it would be the first place that it would happen. But the fact is, I just don't see, from a logical standpoint, how you could have a regulatory taking when we're not doing anything to the plaintiff's property, and we are easing a regulation on a citizen of the Village of Blanchester. The Village of Blanchester did not take any action whatsoever with respect to plaintiff's property and only eased the regulation at the request of the landowner of the Village of Blanchester citizen. There's no case anywhere that says that there can be a takings under those circumstances.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Demas, you've used up all of your time and then some. You can have 30 seconds.
Your Honors, we would just respectfully ask that under this unique situation to think about that if Mr. Clifton does not have standing and if he is not permitted to pursue his claim on the merits, then any person on a municipal, county, state border could be subject to government action on the other side, and they simply could have no recourse. Because just as here, he's outside of the jurisdictional border, the regulation, his property is not the object of the regulation. But it just seems inequitable and illogical that that person could have no recourse. And under the current ruling from the 12th District, the person would have no recourse. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. This matter is concluded, and we will take it under advisement, and you will be notified of our decision. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.